Hare Krishna. Okay. So I'm only sitting here by the order of Radhanath Swami, so I beg your mercy that somehow by obeying his order I may be able to offer something of some value to give some hope in your hearts for Krishna consciousness. Reading, continuing the ecstatic narration in the 10th canto, Lord Brahma stealing the boys and the calves. The 13th chapter, text 34, first word by word in translation. Tata pravasya sogopas. Tata pravasya sogopas. Tata pravaya sogopas. Tata shlesha sunirvita. Kshrakshanera pagatas. Taranu smriti udasrapha. Translation. Thereafter, the elderly cowherd men, having attained great feeling from embracing their sons, gradually and with great difficulty and reluctance, ceased embracing them and returned to the forest. But as the men remembered their sons, tears began to roll down from their eyes. Purport. In the beginning, the cowherd men were angry that the cows were being attracted by the calves. But when the men came down from the hill, they themselves were attracted by their sons, and therefore the men began to embrace them. To embrace one's son and smell his head are symptoms of affection. So this purport is two sentences. And the sentences combined are expressing the affection that was felt by the cowherd men upon seeing their sons. It was, at first, they were angry when they saw the cows were running off to their calves and nuzzling the calves and licking the calves and allowing the calves to suckle the milk. So they were coming down after the calves from the hill. But then they saw their own sons. And when they saw their own sons, the natural affection between father and son was awakened. And then they became attracted to their sons, just like the cows had become attracted to their calves. And then, as a result of that spontaneous attraction, then the men embraced their sons. And then, after embracing them, they began to smell the heads of their sons. I think this is probably something only a parent can relate to. But it's expressed here by Srila Prabhupada that to embrace one's son and to smell the head of one's son, these are symptoms of affection. So then I was thinking that the purport of this verse is about affection, that different types of affection one feels and the different reaction one feels according to the object of the affection. So I was looking through Prabhupada's various words on this topic, and from the Science of Self-Realization, there's a very nice passage dealing with affection. So it's expressed there by Srila Prabhupada how the spiritual varieties are merely reflected in this material world. So just like we have the example of the tree, then it's reflected into a river or a lake of water, but the tree is reflected upside down. And we can then understand from this simple example how the material world is a reflection of the spiritual world, but it is a perverted reflection. And sometimes the reflection can be very enchanting. It can almost become somewhat bewildering, like where does the reflection, where does the real tree end and where does the reflection begin? At this time of the year in New Vrindavan, it is autumn season. So during the transition from summertime to autumn, the leaves start changing their color. And there is a symphony of colors. There's a big festival of colors. All the trees are going through, according to the type of tree, is going through a different transition. So some trees are multicolored. The lower branches are still somewhat green, and then they get a little yellow, and then a little orange, and then a dark red. But not a dull dark red. It's like a real, very vibrant dark red. And other trees are completely ecstatically red. And other trees are ecstatically orange. And other trees are shimmering yellow. And all of this is mixed together. And when you see the hillside of trees, then it's hard to focus on any one tree, because each one is just looking so wonderful and the whole picture is so colorful. Then when that same situation is nearby a water, like we have these ponds of, if you've been to New Vrindavan, you've seen we have these ponds, these lakes. So then in the lake, the whole thing is being reflected. And sometimes you can't see where the reflection begins and where the real forest is standing. They have merged. So then there's this great panorama of dancing colors. So then it's a little bewildering. So in the same way, in the material world, we become bewildered by these perverted reflections. So in this world, we're finding that there's love between mother and son, love between wife and husband, love between master and servant, between friend and friend, and between master, the dog, the cat, or even the cow. But these feelings of love that we're experiencing in this world are only reflections of the spiritual world. So Krishna is also the lover of animals, the calves and the cows. So just as here we're loving dogs and cats, Krishna loves cows and calves. So the propensity to love even an animal is there in the spiritual world. Otherwise, we wouldn't have that same propensity here in the material world. But this is simply a reflection. If there's nothing like that in the spiritual reality, how can it be reflected here? A reflection is depending upon the existence of something. So to understand the original propensity to love, then you have to practice Krishna consciousness. So in this world, we are experiencing frustration. Radhanath Maharaj was very vividly expressing the different frustrations of this world yesterday. And this frustration is coming from an attempt to love. Here we love. Man loves women, or woman loves man. But love, which should be bringing great joy and happiness in the material world, results in frustration. Because why? The love is perverted reflection. So actually, Prabhupada states succinctly, there is no love in this world. That was actually, for me, the first clear lesson that I heard and learned from Srila Prabhupada upon my first meeting with him in San Francisco in 1967, that he was glancing at our little temple was kind of small, and it was completely full house. And he looked at the mixture of people, many of them who were young hippie boys and girls. And the hippie culture was based on love and peace. That was their hope, their desire, love and peace. So Srila Prabhupada looks at this the surrounding crowd, and he starts out by saying, there is no love in the material world. So this was a cold, stark fact. It could have been like cold water in the face. But then he very eloquently began to describe the nature and the origin of pure love. And in doing so, he was gaining our love and affection as he was giving his to us. So the loving propensity is so expansive. The Prabhupada said, even by loving the whole human society, you know, some people, they want to love everyone and everything. So even by trying to, because obviously it's impossible, but trying to love the whole human society, that loving propensity will not be fulfilled on account of imperfections. The loving propensity can only be fulfilled or satisfied fully when it's reposed in Lord Krishna. So Prabhupada said, this is the sum and substance of the Krishna consciousness movement. Prema Pramato Mahan. This human form of life is meant to develop love for God. Because in other lives, we have also loved. In other lives, we've loved our children, we've loved our wives, we have loved our husband, we have loved our nest in the bird's life, in the bee's life, we've loved our cave. There is love. There's no necessity for teaching a bird or a beast how to love their children. It's not necessary because it's natural. To love your home, to love your country, to love your husband, to love your children, to love your wife, and so on. All of this love is more or less also there in the animal kingdom. But that sort of love brings no ultimate happiness, no lasting happiness. Prabhupada said, you will be frustrated because this body is temporary. Therefore, all these loving feelings, these loving affairs, they're also temporary. They're not pure. So they are simply a perverted reflection of the pure love that is existing between the living entity and Lord Krishna. But real love is there in friendship between Krishna and his cowherd boys. So the real love is there between Krishna and the cows and the calves. The real love is there between Krishna, the trees, the flower, and the water. In the spiritual world, everything is love. So this natural propensity for desiring love, for seeking love, is properly utilized. Then we'll understand that within this material world, there is no love. That we're merely being temporarily satisfied and then ultimately frustrated by the reflection of the real love coming from the spiritual world. So then we have to utilize the opportunity of this human form of life to understand Krishna. And this is Krishna consciousness, to understand Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the fourth chapter, it is said that janma karma samaye divyam yo hetam yo veti tatvataha. You should understand Krishna in truth, not superficially. Learn the science of Krishna. This is the instruction. So you should try to love Krishna. And then Prabhupada outlines the process of loving Krishna. The process is that you worship the deity, you take prasadam, you chant Krishna's holy names, and you follow the instruction of the spiritual master. And in this way, you'll learn how to love Krishna. And then your life will be successful. And Prabhupada again says, this is the Krishna consciousness movement. So our love and our affection, they're actually meant for Krishna. But unfortunately, out of stubbornness, we try to squeeze some love out of relationships that are not directly connected with Krishna. And the result? Frustration. So the simple solution, surrender to Krishna, love Krishna, love Krishna's devotees, and be happy forever. So again, Prabhupada said, out of ignorance, we stubbornly try to squeeze happiness and love out of these temporary relationships. In one conversation I was hearing him, and Prabhupada said, this dog-like stubbornness is simply keeping you here to the material world. Just like, you know, around the dog there's a collar with a leash. So the, you know, and the dog is pulling and the master is pulling, and, you know. So the same stubborn manner, we have that leash. We have this collar around our neck with a leash. In one hand is Maya, pulling at us, and we're just, you know, dancing with her. And Krishna is over here with his flute, and we're just dog-like stubbornness, avoiding. So it's not that there's an absence of love and expressions of affection in Krishna consciousness. In fact, Krishna consciousness is abundant with love and affection. By very nature, bhakti is the expression of love of God, the very premise of our daily lives. So the story of Krishna and the fruit vendor is a nice, it was one example of love and affection and dealings with Krishna. When Krishna was going to the fruit vendor very hastily, he had his little hands full of grains. And because he was, you know, a child, his hands were small and chubby and not so coordinated. So as he was rushing toward the fruit vendor, all the grains were coming out of his hands in between the fingers. And when he got there, there wasn't hardly anything, but he was offering, here, you take. And the fruit vendor was so overcome with affection that she, out of the same affection, she began filling Krishna's hands with fruits. And as she was putting the fruits in Krishna's hand, her basket, her fruit basket, was becoming immediately filled with valuable gems and jewels. So Krishna is so kind that if anyone offers him a leaf, a fruit, a flower, or some water, he will immediately accept it if it's offered with love and devotion. That is the only condition, that things should be offered with bhakti. Yome bhakti aprayaschati. The fruit vendor belonged to the poor aborigine class, yet she dealt with Krishna with such great affection. She was saying, Krishna, you've come to me to take some fruits in exchange for grains, but all the grains have fallen out. Still, you just take whatever you like. And then she just filled his hands with whatever fruits he could carry. And then Krishna, in the returning the affection, filled her whole basket with jewels of gold. Had she been thinking, if I give Krishna these fruits, I'll get some gold and jewels, the whole thing wouldn't have happened. But because that spontaneous affection was there without any thought of return other than simply pleasing this charming Krishna, this charming cowherd boy, everything was coming. So Prabhupada explains from this incident, one should learn that anything offered to Krishna with love and affection will be reciprocated from Krishna many millions of times over. Just like we're often told, if you take one step towards Krishna, he'll take 100 steps towards you, etc. So the basic principle involved is an exchange of love, this affection. So therefore, Krishna is teaching us in the Bhagavad Gita that all that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, as well as all austerities that you may perform, all should be done as an offering unto me. So there's another example of service that's service and affection that's in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Madhya Lila. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada states, Lord Krishna's mercy is dependent only on affection. So being obliged only by affection, Krishna acts very independently. So Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is very merciful. But his mercy does not depend on mundane rules and regulations. You know, we may be following very carefully so many rules, regulations, so many vrats, etc. But one can only serve Krishna. The service to Krishna can be rendered in two ways. That is through affection or in veneration. But Krishna is dependent only on affection and nothing else. So when service is rendered in affection, then this is the Lord's mercy. One is eligible to receive the Lord's mercy. But when the service is offered in veneration, then this is, Prabhupada says, it's doubtful whether Krishna's mercy is actually involved. Because there's a, when one is doing something out of duty, you may do your duty, but without any affection towards the object of your duty, then there's no reciprocation. So by offering service in affection, one becomes eligible for Krishna's mercy. Now then in the ninth chapter of the tenth canto, there's a wonderful description of Mother Yasoda. So dressed in yellow, saffron yellow sari, with a belt tied around her full hips, Mother Yasoda pulled on the turning rope, laboring considerably, her bangles and earrings moving and vibrating her whole body. Because of her intense love for her child, her breasts were wet with milk. Her face, with its very beautiful eyebrows, was wet with perspiration, and Malati flowers were falling from her hair. So then, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is expressing that, is actually instructing, it's an instruction, that anyone who desires to be Krishna conscious in motherly affection or parental affection should contemplate the bodily features of Mother Yasoda. It's not that one should desire to be like Yasoda. This is an interesting point here. We don't want to be like Yasoda because that would be Mayavada. In other words, you want to be Yasoda. So either in parental affection or conjugal love, friendship or servitorship, in any way, we must follow in the footsteps of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, not try to become like them. So therefore, this description is provided here. Advanced devotees, therefore, must cherish this description, always thinking of Mother Yasoda's features, how she was dressed, how she was working, and the perspiration of the beautiful flowers, how they were arranged in her hair, and so forth. And one should take full advantage of this full description by thinking of Mother Yasoda in maternal affection for Krishna. So here we can get some indication of the nature of spiritual affection and how to achieve it. In the material world, the feeling of affection can be equally replaced by feeling of indifference and even hatred. But in the spiritual world, this affection is an ever-increasing situation. So we want to develop that affection, the real affection, the authentic affection, the spiritual affection. And here's a very clear example. Sometimes we're thinking, okay, but how do I do this? So then Prabhupada is given this wonderful purport, how we can actually develop our maternal affection. So in, also in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto, 8th chapter, it's in the purport, verse 42, it's explained how perfection of pure devotional service is attained when all attention is diverted toward the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Lord. In other words, whatever activity we're doing, if it is not being directed toward the satisfaction and the pleasure of the Supreme Lord, becomes a diversion. So then it's explained, to cut off the tie of all other affection does not mean negation of the finer elements, like affection for someone else. This is not possible, Prabhupada says. A living being, whoever he may be, must have feelings of affection for others, because this is a symptom of life. So, on one hand, I will be explaining how there is that sentiment of cutting the ties of affection that was expressed by Srimati Kuti Devi. And at the same time, these affectionate feelings, they're a symptom of life. So then Prabhupada explains, a symptom of life, such as desire and anger, hankerings, feelings of separation, etc., they cannot be annihilated. This type of affection, when aimed towards materially motivated desires, then this produces the result of bondage. But when the same affection is applied towards Krishna, then this reduces one's attachment on the material side and increases the attachment on the spiritual side, and then this becomes a cause for freedom. So the so-called affection for family, society, etc., consists of different phases of sense gratification. And when that desire is changed for the satisfaction of the Lord, then it is called devotional service. The same propensity, the same loving energy redirected. Just like we have the typical example of the socket in the wall, you plug in one object and you'll get heat. You plug in another object and you will be cooled off. So we redirect this propensity that is there. It is natural in all species. Redirect it towards Krishna, and then it's called devotional service, and that is the cause of liberation. And this is the difference between us and the animals, because the animals, they don't have that ability to redirect their loving propensity. They are simply cut up in their material life situation according to whatever body they've received. So Vairagya Vidya, it not only means to give up the affection of this material world, material affection, give it up, but it also means to increase your affection for Krishna. So it's not that we're just giving up the affection for the material world and becoming zero. Prabhupada said, no, this zero is the Brahma-Bhuta stage. I have no more affection for material things. But the actual stage then is to have that material affection expanded into spiritual affection. So that is our nature, this Ananda Vashat. We want Ananda. Even the animals are seeking affection. It's like there is that nice story where Srila Prabhupada was, I think somewhere in Los Angeles, and a little kitten came. And the devotees were kind of shocked. This little kitten came up, and he was rubbing on Srila Prabhupada's foot. And Srila Prabhupada commented, you know, how this feelings of affection are natural, even in the cat. You know, even we have nice examples of affectionate dealings Lord Chaitanya had his affectionate dealings with animals, so Lord Chaitanya had his affectionate dealings with the puppy dog. But his affectionate dealings with the puppy dog liberated the puppy dog. And Shivananda Sen had his affectionate dealings with the little dog during their yatra. In fact, he was so disturbed. At one point, he had to stay behind to take care of some business. The boatman was refusing to take the dog across, and he had to just, you know, convince him and pay him extra money. And he had been feeding this dog daily, remnants of prasadam. So now he got detained, and all the devotees went on, and he lost track of the dog. And he was very unhappy about this. And he was looking, where is this dog? Where is this dog? He came late on the scene. He was tired. He was hungry. But he wasn't thinking about himself. Where is this dog? Where is this dog? And then he came upon the dog. And the dog was with Lord Chaitanya. So, and fully, you know, in a fully liberated condition. So if we can have the same effect, then attachment, you know, to an animal would not be detrimental. But we know very well how, as one is thinking at the time of death, one gets a type of body. So, you know, by becoming too attached, too absorbed in these temporary affectionate dealings, we run the risk of ourselves entering into a similar body, just like the classic example Maharaj brought, who was actually a very, very advanced devotee, a great ascetic. Remembers, you know, came upon the little deer, saved the little deer, began thinking of the little deer. How can this little deer possibly survive without me? So his meditation would be interrupted. Oh, my dear, do you need something? And da, da, da. And then, you know, at the time of death, Maharaj Bharat became a deer. So, of course, his circumstance was quite extraordinary because he became a deer with full recollection of his previous life, and he knew exactly why he became a deer, and he was given the opportunity to finish things up completely in the next life. But this affection for love and the desire for love and affection is natural. Our natural affects. It is a natural condition. The father's affection is there. The mother's affection is there. The children's affection is there. So the mother or the father, they never forget their affection, but sometimes the child, through bad association, will forget. But Krishna, he never forgets us. We have forgotten, but Krishna never forgets. I've told this before, a practical example, how one of my god sisters, in her advanced age, she developed this dementia. So it seemed like her condition was really pitiful. She had been a very intimate servant of Radha Vrindavan Chandra for almost 2 decades. She was her personal seamstress, and she was constantly meditating on their form and constantly engaging her fingers in sewing exquisite dresses for the Lord. The other day when I left New Vrindavan, they were wearing one of the dresses that Adara had sewn for them. Adara's been gone from the world for almost, I can't even remember, she left her body years and years ago. And before that, she became blind in her eyes, so she couldn't see. She'd sit there in front of the sewing machine. She couldn't see anything, but she would sit there with tears coming out of her eyes, meditating on Radha Vrindavan Chandra and lamenting that she could no longer sew for them. So she wasn't totally blind, but the blindness was she couldn't see sufficiently to sew. And then the dementia hit. So then she wouldn't even really appear to know who she was. She wouldn't appear to know her own son. She'd look at her son, who obviously your children grow up, so now he's a grown man. And she'd say, "You're not my son. My son is a beautiful little boy. You're not my son. You're a fat old man." You know, and it was seeming like really sad to see her in that condition. And one day, well, it was very interesting because her son had to work to support her, so he put her, for her protection, he had to put her into an adult care home, because if he left her at home, sometimes she would get out and she would start wandering on the streets and on a motorway. So sometimes the police would find her wandering on the motorway and they'd say, you know, pick her up. What is your name? What is it? And she would only say, Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Krishna, whatever they said to her. So they would bring her to the temple. And then I would call her son and say, Deet, you know, Adara is here at the temple. So she had stopped speaking in English. Her native language had been Spanish, and she had stopped speaking English. But one day, she had been brought to the temple by the police who found her on the motorway, and she was taking darshan of the deities. And, you know, sometimes we take darshan in a very superficial way. We just, you know, we have a look, you walk out, and if somebody says, well, what color was the outfit? I don't know. You know, well, what was the garland like? I don't know, you know. But she was looking very deeply at the deities, and just, it was very intense, and I was standing and I was watching, observing this, and she suddenly turned to me and she, with her finger, and she goes, you may try to forget Krishna, but he will never forget you. So then that was it, looking back to the deities. At that moment, though, I realized because of her full absorption in Krishna consciousness, even though her external so-called life externally was a mess. She couldn't remember her own name. She didn't know her son. She, you know, appeared completely bewildered and confused, that she was completely fixed in Krishna consciousness, that she was remembering Krishna and seeing Krishna very clearly, so much so that she instructed me that, very correctly, that I may try to forget Krishna. We all try to forget Krishna in subtle ways, you know, by looking for a little relief here and there, taking some material distraction, you know, all ways of forgetting. But Krishna pulls us back. He doesn't want us to forget him. And he'll take care of his devotees. You surrender unto me, have no fear, I will protect you. So I could see how very clearly by this wonderful example of this woman who was apparently materially in a most distressful situation, that she was fully protected by Krishna, and this was demonstrated by her ability to actually see Krishna and remember Krishna and instruct me that even if I try to forget Krishna, Krishna's not going to let me do that. So Krishna doesn't forget us, we forget Krishna. But this Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada, then he says, this Krishna consciousness movement is meant to bring us back, everyone, back to our original Krishna consciousness. And this original consciousness he describes as affection and love between Krishna and his devotee. So the affectionate dealings, the cow's affection for their calves, and in this narration with Brahma, the becoming bewildered by Krishna's divinity, that, you know, wait a minute, what is this young boy, how can he be God? Is he God? Well, let me just see. It wasn't that he was inimical towards Krishna. Actually, he was Krishna's devotee. But he was trying to understand, what is the real thing here? What has happened? Is this really God? So the cow's affection for the calves and the elderly gopi's affection for the boys was causelessly increasing. And this was all due because Krishna had become the cows and calves. And it's explained in the Bhagavad Gita that as Krishna is that Krishna expands himself, he's situated in everyone's heart as the super soul. So in this beautiful pastime, he instead of expanding himself as the super soul, he expanded himself as a portion of calves and cowherd boys for one continuous years. So therefore, Krishna, in the form of the cows and the calves, were present before their before the cowherd boys and the gopas and the gopis. And so this we have the same phenomena when Dhruva Maharaj was meditating on the Super Soul in the heart, and suddenly Krishna was like before him, stood before him. In the same way, they were all, because the cowherd men and women were always thinking of Krishna, and even the cows were always thinking of Krishna because he was their dearmost friend and lover, and their well-wisher and caretaker. So then, when Krishna came in the form of the cows and the calves, everybody was seeing, although they were seeing cows and calves, they were actually seeing Krishna. And then these feelings of affection was naturally increasing. So in this type of situation, when one is reconnecting with Krishna, there's an unlimited flow of everlasting happiness. And that's what means everlasting happiness means without fear of that happiness being broken. Here in the material world, when things are so wonderful, there's that little like, what, when is it going to end? When is it going to end? You know, you can't fully enjoy because you know that there's going to be an end for sure. But in the unlimited spiritual world, there is no end to the happiness, which is great. Which is actually not happiness means also some distress, but there is no distress in the spiritual world. So there's that just ever increasing ecstasy and affection. And the relationship with the Lord is never broken. Like in the material world, you know, we have they have this little game where they'll take a flower and they'll pull a petal. He or she loves me, he or she loves me not, he or she loves me, he or she loves me not, you know. Always thinking like this. But in the spiritual world, this relationship with the Lord is never broken. So there's no grief, there's no fear. And Prabhupada says that this happiness is inexplicable. It can't be explained by words. That there can be no attempt to generate this kind of happiness through any fruit of activity, through any plan, through any arrangement, through any sacrifice. You know. So, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta gave a very nice statement. Said, the special feature of the mellow of friendship exhibited by personalities such as Subal is that it increases the fraternal affection. So this fraternal affection then increases, it becomes it's loving feeling, it becomes a spontaneous attachment, and then it develops into ecstasy where all the ecstatic symptoms continually exist. So this, you know, affection is not just something that remains on one level. The spiritual affection cannot decrease, it can only increase. So in its increasing, then it becomes this attachment to spontaneous attachment, to a subordinate attachment where you're just there for the object of your attachment, and then finally to complete ecstasy, and then all the ecstatic symptoms continually exist. So this is a very wonderful description of the nature of affection, this affection of the cowherd boys and Lord Krishna. Anyways, he was getting a little late. Oh my God. I didn't even know this thing was working. Sorry about that. Anyways, in this chapter, this bewilderment of Brahma, why only Brahma gets bewildered? Even Lord Indra became bewildered. But it's a very wonderful, exciting pastime, and it's also for us, as Maharaj expressed yesterday, very meaningful because this was the last pastime, the last purports given to us by Srila Prabhupada. So it was very fitting that this was occurring at this time of the year during near to Kartik. At that time it was Kartik. And Srila Prabhupada, in this extraordinary example of affection to us out of love of Lord Krishna, to spread the glories of Lord Krishna on his dying bed, was continuing to speak these beautiful purports. And we could understand that this is not the rambling of a diseased person, but this was the pure words of a pure soul who was in pure contact with Lord Krishna. He often told us, these aren't my words. I'm simply writing what Krishna dictates. So in the same way that Bhishma was lying on that bed of arrows, and it was completely ecstatic for him that he lay there. I mean, can't imagine being pierced by anything, what to speak of an arrow, what to speak of hundreds of arrows. And yet he was in complete ecstasy, remembering Lord Krishna. And then Lord Krishna appeared before him because he could not be away from his friend. That was his desire. During the battle with Bhishma, each was shooting each other with arrows. And there was no pain. It was an exchange of ecstatic affection. And then on this his so-called deathbed, this bed of arrows, Bhishma was in great ecstasy. So in the same way, Srila Prabhupada, in great ecstasy, was lying on his bed in Vrindavan, speaking these beautiful purports as he was being dictated to him by Lord Krishna. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada, we can understand, was also in pure ecstasy. So emotions in the material sense, they are binding, they're a source of bondage. But these emotions and affections, they just bind us up. They entangle us in complex situations. But in the spiritual sense, spiritual emotions, spiritual affection, they bring liberation. So they're a cause of great ecstasy. So Srila Prabhupada was commenting on one of the purports out in the purport yesterday. It wasn't in the purport yesterday, but Maharaj was remembering one of the shlokas, and it was describing Krishna as being like a whirl of a lotus flower. So in that lotus flower, Krishna was in the center, and all the others were sitting around him. They were simply looking towards him, just hoping, he will look at me, he will see me. Just like sometimes you're sitting here looking at Maharaj, maybe he'll look at me. You know. So in this way, Krishna, the pure devotees, they always see Krishna with their eyes. And the devotees that aren't yet pure will see through the ears. They'll see Krishna by hearing the descriptions of Lord Krishna. And then in this way, one can always easily remember Krishna. I was thinking about this point, about how we see through our ears. So even when we look at the deities, if we don't hear about Krishna from a pure devotee, from a pure soul, even seeing the deities, we may not be seeing Krishna. I had an opportunity to meditate on Radharani's lotus feet recently. Because there was it wasn't exactly a controversy, but it was some questionings on Radhastami. On Radhastami, I don't know if you do it here at Gopinath Mandir, do you show Radharani's feet on Radhastami? So some temples they do. So it was should we or should we not? So I was doing research to find if this happened during Prabhupada's time, and did Prabhupada ever say anything about Radharani's lotus feet? And I seemed to remember something, but I couldn't find it. And then all of a sudden, it was in front of my eyes. And it was a wonderful conversation between Srila Prabhupada and Vishnu Janan. Srila Prabhupada had gone to the Radha Damodar bus party where Radha Damodar were installed in one of the buses. And he looked at Radharani and he said, oh, why is her dress so long? And Vishnujanan said, "Oh, well, I thought we should keep her feet covered." And Prabhupada said, "Oh, you don't like Radharani's feet?" So then after that, it became a little a custom that Radha Damodar, the tip of Radharani's feet, her lotus toes, would be revealed. But when Radha Damodar came to live in Gita Nagari, then the custom shifted to just once a year on Radhastami. But a very sweet meditation. But the idea, the point I'm making really is that Srila Prabhupada was pointing something out. He could see something that we could not. And that's how we can see. If we listen to the words of the pure devotee, then our eyes become opened. We can actually see. So the seeing comes first through the hearing. So, anyway, thank you for your attention. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Any questions or points or corrections? No.
Thank you for the fabulous class. If we have Krishna in the center of our family life, really, I mean, have Krishna in the center of our family life, and everyone is focusing on Krishna, do our relationships with our wife and children and all that become devotional service and also eternal?
So the question is, if
do the relationships that we have with our husband and wife and children, I mean, do they become devotional service and also become eternal like our other devotional service directed towards Krishna?
According to Srila Prabhupada, the relationships in this world are temporary. Devotional service is eternal, but the relationships are temporary.
Even if we're fully engaged in devotional service, the whole thing.
Well, that's up to Krishna, but that's not the object. The Mormons have that belief that you're going to go to their heaven with your family, whoever your, you know, your wife. And the Mormons sometimes have more than one wife, so you can go with one or two or how many wives you have. And all the children, and you're going to go in these bodies and be in heaven. So they haven't actually offered any proof of this or, you know, even explained how that can happen, given the fact that they also die and they see that the bodies decay. So one would think that they would understand there's a spiritual body. But the spiritual body is independent of the material body and the material circumstance. And it always will be. So... Actually, I was just remembering something Prabhupada said in one of the purports. He said, this present Krishna consciousness movement is an attempt to keep Krishna in the center. All activities will then become beautiful and blissful. Even our household activities. You know. Okay. Hare Krishna.
Also, since you had such intimate association with Srila Prabhupada, could you maybe relate one or two experiences you had with him where he really showed a lot of loving propensity?
Oh, there were so many. I think that our lives were showered with Srila Prabhupada's affection in all circumstances. Just the fact that he came here at an advanced age, taking up so much burden to instruct us under so many conditions was an example of his grand affection. And the fact that he would be ready and willing to go out and preach at any time, even if he was ill or had not rested or had not eaten. Why was this preaching? To relieve us of our ignorance, to relieve us of our darkness, of our illusion. That he cared so much. So this was out of great affections. all of his activities were bound by the affectionate dealings due to his relationship with Krishna, that he could see the Lord in the heart of every living entity. And when he'd see the living entity bewildered and struggling in this material world, then out of affection, he was trying to deliver us from our ignorance. There wasn't any, I can't see anything that he did that wasn't with affection. Okay. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada, ki jai. Srimad Bhagavatam, ki jai.